We even got theme music working, didn't we? Nice work, Tony. You said I was going to throw you under the bus? I would never do that. Although, speaking of, Eric Bullard's going to join us in a minute. He's got a book called Bloggers on the Bus. We won't throw him or you, Tony, under the bus. No worries. Brad Friedman in for Malloy all week long here, broadcasting live out of beautiful downtown Burbank. K-Talk AM 1150. Glad you're with us today. If you want to call into the show, truth seekers, remember, we've got a new 800 number this week only. 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Next hour, we're going to have Mimi Kennedy, Dharma's mom, in studio with us. Yeah, it's a Hollywood show. Oh, and tomorrow night, Ed Asner. See, speaking of Hollywood, Ed Asner's going to be with us Wednesday. Sybelle Edmonds. Did you guys hear that out there? Sybelle Edmonds is going to be with us, and she's going to be taking your calls on Wednesday. If that means nothing to you, get home and hit that Google and look up Sybelle Edmonds. You'll understand in a day or two. Also, Marcy Winograd is going to be joining us. She's a progressive Democrat. That's a capital P, progressive Democrat, who's going to be running against Jane Harmon again this year. But first, speaking of elections, our old friend... Oh, where's my... See, where's my papers? I'll just make this up as I go along. Our old friend Eric Bullard joins us. He is a senior fellow at MediaMatters.org. He's the author of Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. Welcome to the Malloy Show, Mr. Bullard.
Hey, Brad, how are you?
I'm good. All right, you know what my first complaint's going to be?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm. So what, Brad blog, not in the book, doesn't matter? Changed elections, changed politics, but no Brad blog. All right, so what's your explanation?
Well, I have a very accurate and helpful explanation. I had to cut 35,000 words before my editors let me. And at one point, in the introduction, I did a greatest hits list of like 30 or 40 early pioneers. That got cut for space, and also I thought, if I left anyone out, I'm never going to hear the end of it, so I left everybody out.
Okay, no one believes you,
so
Bullard.
Sure
I was in. All right, I'll let you off the hook, because I find the book so damned entertaining, frankly, and I want to thank you for writing it. Give us an idea why you did write it. I know that, 1972, the book The Boys on the Bus that covered the election between Nixon and McGovern. And so this sort of picks up from there, does it not?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I definitely used the title, and that was Timothy Krause's sort of landmark book about, you know, he was the first to sort of pull back the curtain on the political press corps at the time. Very few people could recognize, political bylines, and they certainly were not sort of these celebrities that they are today, and they didn't have brands, and so people didn't really understand, I don't think, the machinations that went on behind the scenes, and there were a small number of gatekeepers. So that book really shed the light on the Johnny Apples and the David Broders of the world, and Robert Novaks, and people then began to understand that there was this whole culture behind that Beltway journalism. And for the blogging, I did sort of want to pull the curtain back and show people that there were sort of living, breathing people in the blogosphere, because usually within the mainstream press, it's sort of this, you know, this faceless description of, you know, the angry bloggers. And I felt over the years that, the press didn't really give them their due. Obviously, there's been a lot written and a lot, you know, discussions about the blogs. But, you know, for instance, I kept waiting for the Washington Post to start publishing some profiles of these people who had extraordinary sort of life backgrounds, and, you know, these completely, this sort of eclectic, unexpected group of ragtag sort of activists that had accomplished an amazing amount. But the Washington Post, up until I think January of this year, had never published a feature on a liberal blogger. So
I
wanted to document it. I thought it was serious and important, and I wanted to sort of tell their story. And then I also just sort of used the 208 campaign as a backdrop to show sort of specifically how they had an impact.
Yeah, they ran something last year in the Washington Post. I think it was on Josh Marshall, great blogger.
Yeah.
But you mentioned not on liberal bloggers. Were they covering more, was the media covering more the right-wing bloggers?
Well, sure. If you go back to the 2004 campaign and you know, the so-called Memogate story with Dan, when, you know, the bloggers got sort of drove Dan Rather off the anchor desk at CBS News, I mean, they were heralded as the next, you know, the next coming in terms of new media, and they were going to be this, these right-wing bloggers, these Republican bloggers were going to be these new superstars of the press.
And did they actually profile them and go into their personalities and so forth?
Sure. I mean, you can find lots of profiles about the guys on Powerline and Michelle Mulkin and all of our favorites. Sure, that's automatic. You know, if you have an impact in the press, if you get a big following, if you break news, that is the simplest equation of the Washington Post. You get profiled. But if you're a liberal blogger and you do those things, they're just not that.
Crickets. I know. Okay, how do you explain that difference?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's, you know, that goes back to my previous book, sort of Lapdogs, and how the press rolled over for Bush, and this four-decade crusade in terms of the liberal media bias and conservatives just hounding, you know, the press relentlessly. So a way you prove that you're not liberal in this case is you ignore the liberal blogosphere and you pretend they're not that big a deal and you don't really give them their due. So I think it's sort of the pressure from the right. And reporters and journalists have sort of developed these rabbit ears over this charge of liberal media. And so, again, what's a way to prove that you're not liberal is you pretend that the blogosphere is of no significance. The liberal bloggers are of no significance whatsoever. And in fact, you go out of the way to sort of denigrate them and mock them.
And yet, for all the work that you guys have done at Media Matters, you know, documenting, you know, showing in no uncertain terms that there is not a liberal media.
That's
and
right.
Showing, you know, two great studies. If it's Sunday, it's conservative. And I think the second one was, what, If It's Sunday, It's Still Conservative, a couple of years later.
Yeah.
Showing just how tilted to the right all of these Sunday news shows are. So you guys have made this case over and over again. Has the corporate mainstream media not, have they not responded at all? Have they not changed at all? Or are we still looking at the same thing we were looking at 2, 4, 6 years ago?
Oh, it's the exact same conversation. I mean, what is one of the recurring media themes in the last couple weeks? It's this how the press has given Obama a free ride, you know, and Samuelson and the Newsweek wrote a column on it. You know, suddenly pundits are concerned that, you know, the press being too nice to a White House is this grave threat to democracy. In 8 years under the Bush under the Bush administration, you know, the pundits fought off that claim vigorously from progressives like me and bloggers who were pointing it out. But suddenly 4 months into the Obama administration, and suddenly, you know, this obsequious press coverage is a threat to our democracy. So we're seeing this theme everywhere that the press is, the liberal press is rolling over for Obama, and again, it's just a continuation of this four-decade crusade. Even though, as you point out, if you read Media Matters, this idea that, you know, the press is going easy on Obama is a joke. But it's accepted. It's conventional wisdom at this point.
Well, it is. And, you know, I couldn't help but notice we were talking about Iran in the last hour and the way the media has been dealing with the Republicans' complaints. I would call it opportunism. In the lead up to the Iraq war, when there was Democratic voices complaining about the way things were being run, complained about George Bush, they got nothing. They got no airtime. They got nothing at all. As a matter of fact, you know, guys like Phil Donahue, who had the number one show at MSNBC, he got fired.
Driven off the air.
Driven off the air. And yet, so we see this show, you know, over the weekend, I think I saw more about you know, is Barack Obama being too timid? Here are these Republicans who say
right.
so. Here's this guy who lost the election last year. He says so. So it must be true. It's amazing.
It is amazing, and there's really is an extraordinary double standard. I mean, particularly if you go to places like Politico or your Washington Post or other very Beltway-centric news organizations,
mm-hmm.
the simplest formula for news right now is if a Republican criticizes Obama, it's news. Not only news, it's a big headline. And it's literally, all they have to do is voice a complaint, and it's news. Of course, you know, the party out of power have been doing that for a couple of centuries.
Yeah.
If you go back to the Democrat, not just to the run-up to the war, you're right. I mean, I pointed out Lapdog, Senator Kennedy gave a very prophetic anti-war speech in the fall of 2002, and the Washington Post set aside exactly one sentence in its entire war coverage. So it's not just the pre-war, but anything before and after the war. I mean, the Democrats were holding press conferences nonstop in early on in Bush's administration complaining. And they were just dismissed as these moonbats and sore losers.
I know.
But Republicans do it. They're serious and they're important, so we must pay attention to what they say.
We must pay attention to what they say and cover it even more than what the Democrats are having to say. It's amazing. Eric Bollard from Media Matters, author of Bloggers on the Bus. Stick with us. We're going to take some of your calls straight ahead. Brad Friedman in from Molloy, 877-520-1150. Dave in Chicago. John in L.A. Hang in there. We're going to take your calls right when we get back. You're listening to Molloy. It's 17 after.
Singers Lonnie Mack and Twang and Eddie Hitzman ring, we're going steady. Take it easy, take me high, lie, lie. House of fire, poke emotion, poke passion, deep and purple satisfaction. Baby, baby, gotta, gimme, getting hotter. Sammy's cooking, Leslie Gore, Richie Valens, end of story. My beast, the Fujiyama, Kama Sutra, Rama Lama, Richard Perry, Spectre Barry, Righteous Archers, Nielsen, Harry, Shimmy, Jimmy, Coco, Pop it, Fats, back and Tina, Pop it.
Life is a rock, but the radio gold me. Gotta turn it on.
All right, welcome back to the Molloy Show. Friedman in for Molloy. Give us a call, 877-520-1150. Stop by bradblog.com, where we've got an open thread at the very top of the page. Agent 99 is in that chat room, and I promise to swing by and check it out soon. And, I need to swing by and check out the Truth Seekers over on DU. Hey, guys. All right, we're speaking with Eric Bollard from MediaMatters.org and author of the awesome new book, Bloggers on the Bus. And I get to say that not because I'm in it, because I'm not. I'm just saying it's awesome because I've read it, or at least a bunch of it, and I really enjoyed it. You want to take a couple of calls, Eric?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's see if I can get this board working right. We're going to go down to Dave in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome, and thanks for hanging on so long. What's up, Dave?
No problem. Hey, Brad, I remember you from back in Crawford, Texas, under the tent with Cindy Sheehan and that whole deal. You're sitting there on a laptop with a little piece of paper taped to the table by that Bradblock.
That was me.
I remember. Yeah, I find it so interesting. The Democrats, liberals, and progressives organized these protests, Washington, D.C., all around the country. The Republican National Convention up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, people got their heads busted, arrested, and the CNN and Fox, all of them, they're all over this Iran protest, wall-to-wall coverage all weekend long. Now, is there something I don't understand about geographical dynamics of our country versus Iran, how it's easier to cover a protest in Iran versus, say, going up to Minneapolis, Minnesota with a camera crew? Is there something
great,
I don't get?
Great question, Dave. Thanks for that. Eric, we had some of the largest demonstrations we have ever seen in this country leading up to the war. No coverage. If a demonstration happens and no one covers it, does it actually happen? How do you explain that, sir?
Well, in terms of the pre-war stuff, I mean, that was just a classic example of not wanting to deal with it. I mean, I remember the New York Times had a piece on the Washington rally, and it was so bad they basically had to rewrite the story like 2 days later as a sort of a semi 800 word apology, because the original piece said fewer people than anticipated showed up, and that wasn't true, and it was just, you know, the press just doesn't really do protest coverage, and they think it's goofy and they think it's lame, and particularly when liberals and progressives are marching, and particularly during the run up to the war, when everyone in the Beltway, you know, knew the war was going to happen, and most people had signed on for it. So I mean, they didn't really want to be bothered with these
but how do you explain
hippies.
How do you explain the difference? They don't do protest coverage, yet they go wall to wall in Iran. I mean, we have protests
here.
Well,
that is a little different. I mean, you know, we're talking about a country that, you know, might actually topple, or it's quite extraordinary to have any sort of demonstrations in a country like Iran. And so I think I'm fine with that. I think that's what CNN should be doing and worldwide news organizations. But it does, as the caller suggests, it does sort of highlight the complete failings when people do, in large numbers, sort of amass and demonstrate in the United States, and particularly when liberals and Democrats do it, it's just sort of, you know, it's just completely ignored because the press doesn't take it seriously.
Do you find, I know, and I think you and I all see the same thing, and we're scratching our head, well, how does this ever change? How do you see, or how does Media Matter see the difference between, are you seeing difference in the network, the cable coverage between Fox and CNN and MSNBC over this Iran stuff? Are they all pretty much covering this one similarly?
That's a good question. I think Fox, you know, Fox does whatever the RNC tells them to do, or it's just sort of coincidental mind meld. So obviously I think Fox, especially at night and Glenn Beck and in the morning, you know, it's funny, you know, the old saying used to be like, well, Fox just does news all day, but then they do opinion at night. So that's okay. It's like their op-ed page. And now it's like, they do opinion at night, okay, then they do opinion during Glenn Beck, okay, they do a opinion during Fox and Friends in the morning, and now it's like there's these little three-hour windows where they're supposedly do news. But, so, you know, Fox is doing whatever the RNC is doing, which is attacking Obama from the far right for not, you know, doing the John McCain bomb Iran. But I think the networks and the other sort of serious news channels are covering it pretty similarly. You know, they're having trouble getting people there, and the story seems pretty obvious, so I don't see many differentiation among everyone else minus Fox.
Eric Bullard of MediaMatters.org. Please buy his book, Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. It's really good stuff. Wish we had more time with you, Eric. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Talk to you soon.
Back after this on The Molloy Show.
Darkness had descended all across the land. A lone voice in the distance uttered, "Yes, we can." He gave good speeches, never sweat. He was real good at the internet. He's Barack Obama. He's come to save the day. He passed a major stimulus for the bourgeois. It said he had the deficit. Stop unemployment, money dies. Fix healthcare in his spare time. He's Barack Obama. He's come to save the day. He'll use his superpowers to win in Iraq. Then Kung Fu Chow, the Taliban. Ka-chow, ka-chow. Our image in the world, he'll mend and make the Jews and Arab friends. He's Barack Obama. He's come to save the day.
Sir, we've got a situation. Pirates.
This is the new Jib Jab video. It's frickin' brilliant. It's really good. It's really funny. There's more. Here it comes. Crank it, Tony.
Disregard the mountain debt. Stop the globe from getting warm. Fuel your car with nuts and corn. Leave a building, run industry. Save a kitten from a tree. Fix the schools, go to space. I'm sure robot hit the face. Stop the train, press the man. Smoke the bus, we don't care. Just to save the day. Just let it go.
If only he would do all those things. Brad Friedman in for the mic on the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Yeah, that's the new video from Jib Jab. The song is great. The video, even better. We got it over at BradBlog.com. It's really good. It's like Spider-Man good. The special effects. Yeah, the final shot of Barack Obama standing on the top of the White House holding the flag. I mean, it's really, really impressive. All right, 877-520-1150. That's the number this week, unlike Mike's usual number. 877-520-1150. Have the entire half hour to take your calls here. Coming up in the next hour, Mimi Kennedy, the lovely Mimi Kennedy, is going to be in studio with us here. So if I can make these phones work, let's hit a couple of them here. Who's been holding? John in Los Angeles has been holding forever. Thank you, my friend. Welcome to the show. What's up?
Yeah, Brad. Yeah, yes. I really like both your guests because peace in the Middle East is the most important thing for the U.S. And the key to it, I think, is media coverage in the United States. You know, this big lie that, well, Israel's in danger of being pushed into the sea. Nobody believes that in Israel. The only people that believe that are Americans.
The key to everything is the media coverage. And the reason we're in the soup that we're in is because the media has failed us from top to bottom. But I guess I don't need to tell you that, John.
I mean, you know, you can't make a guerrilla war against the U.S. military or Israel's military with suicide bombers unless you can't be saying, well, you know, they're not bad after we force them to give us the West Bank for our Palestinian state, then we're going to be friends with them. You got to villainize them, just like they've done to Americans and to Israelis. You know, they're just Satans and rats, and they deserve to die. Nobody believes that anybody's really going to push Israel. Israel has 200 nuclear weapons, which Britain has 180. In 30 minutes, they can destroy all of Europe and North Africa and the Middle East and the eastern third of the U.S.
Well, and thanks for that thought, John. I mean, they do need to defend themselves. I don't begrudge Israel that in any way. I begrudge the way they defend themselves and the way they go overboard in defending themselves. And, of course, they have nukes, but nobody else gets them. Why? Because they're our friends. That's the way it goes. All right, let me go out to Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire. How are you, Brian?
Hey, Brad, I believe this breakdown of the American constitutional government and its system founded by our founding patriots, it began really in the phony election of November 1980, the October surprise that preceded it, and the coronation in January 1981 of Ronald Reagan. And, you know, there's a prescient book that your last guest, he probably knows a lot about, but Professor Bertram Gross, he published it in 1980 called Friendly Fascism, The New Face of Power in America. It tells all of what has come down now from the corporatist America. We are deep into corporatist America. And what we have now is we had the 2004 election clearly mm-hmm. stolen, 2000 election clearly stolen, national election to elect this inbred blue blood George W. Bush, totally unqualified man to be president of the United States, 8 disastrous years, the non-acting the Securities Exchange Commission, he had the 9/11 attacks, that somehow allowed for hours 9/11 attacks. I'm an ex-Marine. I know other Marine pilots, jet pilots and all that, they would have been on there at like 5 minutes is an eternity to a jet fighter. It's absolutely an eternity. Ask like the brave jet fighters, you're just talking about Israel there too. That country is not to blame for our Iraq war. We did that ourselves for the war profiteers and the oil thieves.
We did it ourselves, and we looked the other way when these elections went south on us, when we couldn't see our own ballots, when we couldn't count these elections.
Now we're going after
right.
Iran's official media for their so-called the allegedly stolen election, and that we've been so passive, the sheeple in the national media. That's what I was going to ask your guest, about our own stolen elections. How do we stand up when our official media, peacefully, when our official media is knocking us down at every turn, and especially when if they finally, the NSA, the Fourth Amendment is dead in the water in this country. Barack Obama is probably not going to really try to save it. If they shut off the internet in this country, what are we going to do?
Oh, man, I don't even want to think about that. Brian, thanks for that call. I don't even want to think about what happens if the internet goes away at this point. it gets real scary. And, Brian, one thing you can do, I don't know that Eric Bullard would have had any answers for you on how to get the media to do their job. I mean, what those guys over at Media Matters have been doing, have been documenting, you know, for years now, showing in no uncertain terms, and no, they are not who Bill O'Reilly makes them out to be, these vile left liars, nonsense. If you read their stuff, it is so well documented. It is so just, here's the facts, here's the facts, here's the transcripts, here's what they did. You know, so I don't know that Eric would have any answers. I don't think I have any answers. I do know that, Brian, you were calling from the Manchester, New Hampshire. They had a problem with their election in 2008, and it was real damn difficult to get anyone's attention, including Barack Obama, who could have had the entire election counted for $2,000. Dennis Kucinich had to step up on the Democratic side. He paid about about $60,000 to have a small partial count. He couldn't get that $2,000 deal because he wasn't close enough. On the Republican side, Albert Howard, a little-known candidate, came up with $60,000 there to recount that side. Most of that money came from Ron Paul folks. Where are the democracy patriots in the media? Why aren't they covering this stuff? Why does democracy only matter in Iran? I don't know. All right, let me get to Dorian, Long Beach, California. Dorian, you're on the Mike Malloy Show with Brad. Oh, Dorian. Oh, did I do that right? There we go.
Hi.
There.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dorian?
Oh, fine. All I can say anyway is that I do hope those people over there do get justice. It's better than what we got in the year 2000 and the year 2004. And I hope anyway that they will overcome their obstacle and have a new election.
Thank you, sir. I hope.
Yeah, and also they will with this 9/11 Mysteries on DVD called 9/11 Mysteries.
All right, thank you very much.
You.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
The call, Dorian.
Bye.
Give us a call 877-520-1150. I got a couple lines open. That's 877-520-1150. If you're calling Mike's regular number, you ain't gonna get him. You got to call us out here in Los Angeles. Let me get to Will. In Brea, California. Hey, homie, what's up, Will?
Hey, good morning, man, or good evening. I did the same thing through your telephone person. It's nighttime. I just want to say, hey, I'm so glad to hear you again, dude. I haven't talked to you since the, what was it, filibuster to the filibuster on the Young Turks?
Oh, man, is that the last time you heard me?
That is the last time I heard you. I was so glad to hear you again, dude. Where's your regular program?
Dude, I got no regular program.
What the hell's wrong with these people?
I know, it's crazy. What are they thinking? But I got a regular blog. You can stop by bradblog.com. Okay. All right, we're going to move on to Nora in Minneapolis, if I have this right. Do I have it right? Oh, Nora.
Right.
Hey, Nora, welcome to the Malloy Show. What's up out in Minneapolis?
Hey, well, she told me to focus. I had two subjects. One was about the Franken, but she said I should focus on this one. And this is it. After 30 years, I have to commend the mainstream media for finally stepping up about the problem of the war on marijuana. And specifically, today on CNN, it came around the second time about this mayor in a town, I believe it's called Berwyn Heights, in Prince George's County, Maryland. Some police had confiscated the package that had their address on it, put it on their front porch for them, and had a SWAT team waiting, and when they picked it up, brought it in because it had the wife's name on it, he set it on a table. The SWAT team came in, smashed down the mother-in-law with handcuffs, killed the two dogs, and then arrested the mayor with his shorts and said that he was crazy because he tried to say he was the mayor, and he is the mayor.
Wait, is he the mayor?
Yes.
He's the mayor, and
he's the mayor of this town called supposedly Berwyn Heights or something, suburb town or whatever.
So I haven't seen any of this coverage that CNN is doing on the marijuana issue. Have you been watching there? They've had a
last
special
week it
blessing.
Was on all, every single night.
Was it any good?
Anderson Cooper.
Was it any good?
It was, you know, for and against.
Yeah.
It was half and half.
Okay.
Of course, to me, it's like it's a harmless thing, like eating celery. Why is there a law against it?
Yeah, it was. It was balanced.
Anything wrong with it?
Exactly. It was balanced. It was like when it's sunny outside, we have to say that some say it's raining. Even though we can go out and look at the window and see that it's sunny. All right, before I let you go, Nora, and I got to get to a break, since you're from Minneapolis, you wanted to say something about the Franken.
Well, it's very briefly, we have a weekly show called Almanac, and they have these people come on, and it was professors of politics, etc.
Yeah.
And here they clarified that the Supreme Court is sitting here writing a 50 to 60 page report.
Yeah.
That's why they say it's taking so long, and they expect it to come out this week. Everyone's expecting it this week, but I didn't realize that they have to write 50 and 60 pages.
Yeah, well, they do. This is what the election trial court, the three-panel judge, they also took about 2 or 3 weeks because they didn't want to get second-guessed at the Supreme Court level, the state Supreme Court level, and I suspect the state Supreme Court doesn't want to give Coleman anything to go to the U.S. Supreme Court
with. Yeah, they
want
to cover every base so that it's completely, like, lock-proof or whatever you call it.
Yep. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, Nora.
Thank you.
Good hearing from you. People are complaining about how long it's taking to get a senator in Minnesota. Yeah, it is. But not because of the court system, not because of the laws, because of Norm Coleman, because the Republicans want this to go on as long as they can possibly keep 60 votes out of the Senate. The law is good, and frankly, I wish other states had a similar law where they would not send a certificate until all election contests were settled. All right, we're going to take more of your calls after this break. Give me a call, 877-520-1150. Got a bunch of lines open. Would love to hear from you on any damn topic you want. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. We'll be right back.
Arrows of neon and flashing marquees out on Main Street. Chicago, New York, Detroit, and it's all on the same street.
In for Mike Malloy, live from Los Angeles, California, in beautiful downtown Burbank. Here in the studios of, I'm in Stephanie's studio, actually. I'm in Stephanie's chair. Is this Stephanie's chair, Tony? Stephanie's chair. I'm here in Stephanie's chair all week long, and couldn't be happier. I'll leave her little love notes, because you know what? I ain't waking up at 6 a.m. when she's on to to see her in person. From home, I can... give us a call if you like. 877-520-1150. We've got some open lines that we can try to hit before the top of the hour when Mimi Kennedy, Progressive Democrats of America, and of Dharma and Greg, and of the new movie In the Loop, which is not even out yet, but I saw it over the weekend. And we're going to talk to her about that, and we're going to talk to Marcy Winograd in the next hour tomorrow night at Asner. On Wednesday, Sybil Edmonds. What more could you ask for? Strange story coming out of South Carolina. Governor Mark Sanford kind of disappeared. This Republican governor. This is from Slate. As of 4 p.m. Eastern time today, he had gone missing. Lady Jenny Sanford told AP that her husband had been gone for several days and she didn't know where he is. His wife didn't know where he was. The governor's personal and state phones have been turned off. He has not responded to phone and text messages since Thursday, a source said. Jenny Sanford said she was not concerned. His wife is not concerned. She said the governor said he needed time away from their children to write something. The governor's office issued a statement Monday afternoon saying, quote, Governor Sanford is taking some time away from the office this week to recharge after the stimulus battle and the legislative session and work on a couple of projects that have fallen by the wayside. About, 2 hours later, over at Talking Points Memo, Zachary Roth writes, so the where in the world is Mark Sanford story is only getting weirder. The office of the lieutenant governor, Andre Bauer, is now telling reporters that the governor's office says it's reached Sanford and that he's fine. Bauer would take over the governor's duties in an emergency because he's the lieutenant governor. But here's the thing, writes Zachary Roth. The governor's staff himself doesn't seem willing to confirm that directly to the press. Instead, Sanford's spokesman released the following statement. Quote, Governor Sanford is taking some time away from the office this week to recharge after the stimulus battle in the legislative session to work on a couple of projects that have fallen by the wayside. We are not going to discuss the specifics of his travel arrangements or his security arrangements. A few hours later, a second statement. The governor put in a lot of time during the legislative session, and after the session winds down, it's not uncommon for him to go out of pocket for a few days at a time to clear his head. Obviously, that's going to be somewhat out of the question this time, given the attention this particular absence has gotten, blah, blah, blah. The upshot is, in neither of these statements does Sanford's office say that they've actually been in touch with him. He's just sort of disappeared, gone off the map, gone off the radar. Zach Roth goes on, indeed, the clear implication is that they haven't been, or presumably, they haven't been in touch with him, or presumably they'd have said so. In fact, it's unclear how closely the office even knows the governor's whereabouts. If it did, why the need to track his cell phone location, which is apparently what they did? And if he told his office, why didn't he tell his wife? Very bizarre. CNN is reporting late this evening that Sanford is now claiming, they're now claiming that he's where? Went hiking in the Desi? Do you have any idea when? Hiking in the Appalachian Trail. Is that confirmed by CNN or is that the latest speculation?
Spokesman.
His spokesperson is now saying that. And has that been confirmed because I actually talked to them or...
His spokesman actually sent, it looks like his spokesman sent a some sort of written statement to the effect of he's on the Appalachian Trail. But as you said, he did not actually say he spoke with the governor. He just said that is where he is.
Kind of a bizarre story, but they don't seem worried. The wife doesn't seem worried.
They say apparently that he's done this before, that this is something where he'll go away for a few days just to have some time to himself.
This is this guy, he's going to be a presidential candidate. Or he's been talking like one.
He's been making noises about that, yes.
Yeah. Well, like, do we want a president that disappears for a few days
at a time? That absconds with himself?
Yeah. Absconds with himself.
Is that a word? Can I use that word?
You just did. Well, between him and Ensign, speaking of absconding with oneself and one's girlfriend, yeah, Ensign, he's out of the picture. And incredibly, the governor, by the way, so Senator Ensign had an affair, right? He should have resigned or told everybody else they should resign. He didn't. Now the governor of Nevada is saying, oh, he'll be fine. He feels very badly for him, but he'll be fine. Meantime, the governor's wife is divorcing him because apparently he had an affair. Also a Republican.
I guess it depends on which Republican you
are. I'm starting to think these guys are hypocrites. Brad Friedman in for Malloy. We're back with Mimi Kennedy right after this.